Hey friends, I'm Naomi, and I'm glad to have you here listening to A Creative Purpose. This space is here to encourage and support creatives bring their ideas to life. I believe we each have our own brilliance to share with the world, and when we lean into that, we have opportunities to live an adventurous life. I have some great conversations with other creatives where they share their journey and the lessons learned along the way. I'll also share my story and what I've learned and am learning on this beautiful, sometimes difficult road to living a life I love. I'm excited to see where our conversation goes today, and welcome, Nicole.
Thank you for having me, Naomi. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's fun. Can you share with my friends kind of what you do and where you're at in the world?
Sure. So I currently own a cleaning company called Coley's Cleaners, which I call more than just a cleaning company. We want a service for our clients, not just cleaning their home, but making them feel better in their life and maybe taking things off of their plate so that they too can kind of do what creatively inspires them or maybe makes them feel better about themselves. We have segments that offer tips on taking care of your home throughout the year, tips on how to lose weight and exercise at home while doing those tasks. A cooking segment and just all sorts of little fun things. And then I also am an author of a book series called A Through Z Guide to Raising a Good Human. And it's a communication guide, not a parenting guide. Basically that helps you navigate communicating with your kids from birth all the way through so that when you get to that point in their lives where those tough subjects come up, they're not looking at you like you have three heads. And I actually take each subject that's tough to talk about and I say, okay, well, this is what I went through at this age. This is what I would have liked to have heard. And this is what I tell my children. And so it kind of helps navigate that conversation process. And then from that spawned the podcast Conversations with Coley.
That's awesome. I didn't realize. So how did you get into the cleaning business? Was that something that just kind of dropped in your lap or something that you had kind of planned out?
Okay. So I've been in the restaurant industry for over 30 years. I dropped out of high school. I started working for my parents in the back of the house and then kind of worked my way through up into management and had been doing that for quite some time and knew all along since I was young that I wanted to be a business owner. But I knew I did not want to be a restaurant business owner because of all the logistics, the overhead, it's tough. You have to have a thick skin that I don't have. And so I used to clean on the side and I thought, man, I wish I could do that. But how would that sustain me? Because with cleaning businesses, people oftentimes hire you as a luxury. And so it kind of was really weird. And so I was managing the Irish pub here in Dahlonega and COVID happened and they shut it down. And that showed me in that moment that this industry is fragile. So what am I waiting on? And so I went home and I printed up a flyer. You don't need a lot of overhead for cleaning. I needed just the stuff under my sink. And I kind of pride myself on being more natural products. Vinegar, baking soda, those kind of things, kind of not using a lot of the toxins and stuff like that. And so I wanted to prove to myself and to my kids that we could start a business together and this is what it could look like. And so it really started out just being a teaching model with the kids. They taught me how to do some of the graphics and some of the marketing online. And then I taught them how you service a customer. And then it kind of evolved into people saying, oh, you should do tips. And then it evolved into my cooking because I post a lot of the dishes that I make and people are like, you should write a cookbook. Well, why not have a cooking segment? And we created this little character called Coley and she's my little Bitmoji and she's a little hippie girl. And she's, she's become her own person over the last 2 years. So then it just kind of started going from there. I always knew I wanted to be an author and stuff like that. So the cleaning company gave me the money I needed to start the other creative things.
That's awesome. I love that Yeah, you just had to make it work at that moment, and you had, you know, sense enough to just be like, I got this. I can make something happen. And having that vision and actually putting the action to it to make it come to life. That's pretty awesome. That
yeah. And then life likes to throw you, you know, 2020 was weird for all of us. So I booked my second client and then walked out in my yard and shattered my ankle and was like completely out of commission for almost 3 months. I had to have surgery. I couldn't put weight on it. Those two clients waited for me for all that time and then let me come in their home and take all the time I needed and be my physical therapy. And so that showed me like, I do bring a certain something. So if my company could survive that, then what else can it do?
Yeah, definitely. And I like how you said it, you know, if you've expanded it since then. And so like with the cooking, with the book, like what else do you have planned, like as you vision for the future?
My vision is to honestly make Coley's Cleaners, like eventually maybe sell that to somebody who feels good and empowered in, you know, doing that. But I kind of want to evolve the business into more of the book writing, speaking, inspiring, motivating. I became a certified death doula and a ordained minister. So I would kind of like to evolve into maybe the death doula-ing part and maybe bringing back more natural deaths and being comfortable to die in your own space, but in a good, kind of a good surrounding instead of death being like, ugh, scary. I don't want to talk about it. It's gross. You know what I mean? And more of a beautiful experience. So I kind of want to evolve the business that way, but the cleaning side kind of helps fund all that.
Yeah. 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 That's a smart business move. Cause really a lot of ideas do need that financial kind of backing to make it work and to sustain it for a bit and stuff like that. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So tell me more about this death doula. I haven't really heard much about, I mean, I've heard it more recently, but how did that kind of come to life for you as far as like being a thing?
Okay. So I don't know. I was sitting here one day and I was scrolling on Facebook and you know how sometimes they just pop up these random ads and this become a death doula with a candle popped up on my feed. And I sat on that for a minute and was like, imagine if you could make death a good thing, a beautiful thing, a celebrated thing. I want to dive into that. And so I just kind of on a whim started researching it. And the more I read about how it could be a good thing, it could be a way to draw families together, a way to commemorate history in your family. And like they describe it in such a beautiful way. I was like, man, what if you could change the stigma? Because a lot of my books talk about stigmas and the stigma around death. And so I was like, I want to be a part of that. I had to do a lot of soul searching. Like, could I do that for somebody in the right atmosphere? Yes, I could. I would love to be a part of someone transitioning into the next and separating from their bodies. And so when I was studying, I didn't realize the death process is much like the birth process. It's painful. It's traumatic. And it can be that way in the death doulaing. There's, you know, when you're dying, there's a laboring, there's a, you know, there's a lot going on. And so for people who really do truly want to die at home, why not grant them their wish, but kind of keep them in a calmer space as well?
I appreciate that because I think we've talked about before, grief is hard to come by and death is part of that process of, you know, and so it's like, yeah, how can we change those stigmas? To make it more just part of life, you know, we don't have to fear it. We can embrace it. We can celebrate it for what it is. And
because it's inevitable. Yeah. We have to go through it. And I kind of view death differently. When I was 17, I lost my son. And so that is a huge, that's the biggest grief I think that a person can go through is when you bury your child. And once I went through that and had to like unpack it for 27 years, I came to a point where I was like, I just experienced probably the worst death, you know, that a, mm-hmm. that a person can. And so now I feel I can be strong enough to sit and kind of look at it from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that it's hard to get people to understand what it is?
Yes. Yes. People think it's weird. They're like, I don't understand. I don't get it. Well, I don't know exactly how to put it unless I was to sit down and show people like a presentation, like, hey, you know, if you're terminal and you know it, wouldn't you like to be able to set your death mood, have your bed comfortable, have all your favorite things, have all your favorite people around you, and just have it be a good thing, not mm-hmm. this traumatic, I'm in a facility. It's hard to make people understand that you don't have to go to a funeral home and be embalmed and put in the ground in this big giant casket that's going to cost thousands and thousands of dollars. You don't have to go into debt because they have muslins and you can wrap yourself up and be buried even on your property in some counties. So there's a lot of things I think people don't know about right. how they can handle their death and their remains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be really helpful because we're only kind of shown one or two things. It's either a casket or a cremation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what other options are out there and mm-hmm. how, like I've seen where you put your ashes with a tree and then you plant mm-hmm. the tree, you mm-hmm. know, and I like those new alternatives to a tombstone or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, because it shows that life can go on. And mm-hmm. with the dueling too, if your loved one wants to die at home or you want to die at home, there's ways to preserve the body and do ritual bathings. If the loved ones want to bathe the body, prepare it, sit with it. I mean, back in the day when my grandma was young, when her grandfather died, he was put in the parlor for days. People came, they viewed, they, you know, took their time to say goodbye. And it was a long extended process of separating from that loved one. It's not so traumatic. They're whisked mm-hmm. away. They're put somewhere. You're not able to see them till a viewing or maybe an urn. And yeah. so it kind of helps you as a human to say, you know what? Okay, goodbye. And you mm-hmm. know, whatever you believe.
Yeah. 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 Definitely more to explore there. And mm-hmm. Do you find that, you know, because it is kind of like a new thing or something that people don't like to talk about, how do you enter into that conversation even? Like how do you grab somebody's, not attention, like not in a yeah. crass way, you know, but like, yeah. hey, this is an alternative thing. Like, where do you meet people to potentially walk with them?
Yeah. So right now, dipping my toes into it on my personal profile on Facebook, what I did is just ask people questions. What do you think about green burial? And they're like, what's green burial? So I start going into it. And people who are afraid of something new have a tendency to go, I already know what I want to do. Don't talk to me. I don't want to hear it. My next step is going to be maybe hosting a convention or a little small group discussion about death and about these options that maybe people don't know that are out there, but kind of getting the word out. I also started a job part-time at a vet's office. And so I kind of just told them like, hey, I'm a death doula. So maybe if I could start working with animals, because you can do it with animals too. You can come into someone's home that whose animal is going to pass and kind of be there for them. It's not just about the person dying, but it's also about the member, the family members, right. and keeping them feeling okay, checking in on them after, you know, and letting them ritualize their pet, their loved one, you know? So I yeah. want to, I think if I start with animals, then people can kind of go, oh, okay, I see, yeah. I see. Well, I can do that for you. Oh, that was a nice funeral you gave yeah. for my dog. Well, I can do that for you too.
And I think it's nice to have somebody walking you through a process that most of us have never experienced or witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just like you said, like the birth process, if it's your first one, you don't know what's happening. And so having somebody that kind of knows those stages and stuff like that, it makes sense that you would do that for death as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can even go into people's hospital rooms, like maybe they're not comfortable coming home, but you can set that room. and maybe give them some aromatherapy as they're, you know, transitioning. And you can maybe set the lighting where it's not so stark and scary, and just kind of helping them to feel comfortable, because I'm sure it's scary.
Yeah, I would imagine in certain situations more than others. So
yeah. So if you can be that calming presence for somebody, sometimes people carry a vibe that completely shifts a room. And so maybe if I could bring that to somebody, that would bring me great joy. That would bring me purpose, I think.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Cool. Moving into writing more books and stuff. So what you've already written sounds amazing, just communication. And what other things do you feel like you want to get down on paper and share with others?
So the book series is going to be 26 books because it's all the letters of the alphabet. And then I did write a cleaning made fun book. It's more or less the psychology of why things pile up in your home. And breaking that down, you know, why are you procrastinating? Well, because you're overwhelmed, and kind of showing people like, hey, it's okay to say I'm overwhelmed. You don't have to bite off more than you can chew. So I kind of want to dive into that of people are carry a lot of shame that they feel they can't get things done, or, you know, the tasks are so insurmountable in their mind. But if you look at it in a different perspective, then you can feel more empowered, you know? So instead of feeling shame and feeling guilty because I come in and do you a service, why not feel empowered and take on something and then say, oh my God, I feel so good, because that's good for your mental health too. It makes me feel empowered when I walk into a client's home and I make it look professional. It makes me feel good. So I'm getting my good feelings. Well, you can also do that too, but don't fire me.
Yeah. Let's work together.
Yeah. Don't fire me. Work with your kids. I also, in that realm, want to do I kind of called it Coley's Cleaning Classroom, and how to teach parents, or how to motivate parents to motivate their children to want to help. My kids do it willingly. You know why? Mm-hmm. I started young. And then it was a process, and we had to, you know, kids need to have certain reward systems, and they need to feel empowered too. Otherwise they don't want to do it. And so it's all kind of about that. And it falls into the book series. So finishing that up, eventually I do want to go into my life story. I'm going to do a fact fiction book. So it's going to be based on the facts of my life, but fictionalized to make it exciting, but kind of going through the generational abuse and how it ended up shaking out for me, starting from my grandmother's point of view and where that kind of started for our family. And then how it shook out for me and how it impacted my life. And then, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know. But that book is going to be called Through Hell, because a lot of my friends are like, you're the one girl who's been through hell and you were smiling the whole way. And, you know, just so, you know, positive. And it's really those people that kind of turned my brain on to say, you know what, Nicole, you're better than just being a restaurant manager. You have something to share, and you have something to teach. And they kind of opened up my eyes and my mind. And then it all just started tumbling out.
All these things that you're like holding, all these ideas and visions and plans and books and all this, you sound like a multi-passionate, right? Mm-hmm. Like very creative mind, wanting to help other people. Were you always like that growing up?
I think that's the people pleasing side. I remember my first vivid memory is just being filled with joy for being here on this earth. I used to lay on the grass and just appreciate how that felt, and the clouds and the rainbows and the blue sky and the birds and the animals. And I was just very connected to that. And then when the trauma things started to come to light that I could remember and how life was unfolding for me, there was a deep sorrow and a lot of negative emotion with that, and a lot of self-reflection throughout the whole process from a young age, saying, okay, well, what can I do to make this a good thing? This is terrible now, but this doesn't have to be terrible forever. Like, right. if I'm going through this to teach somebody else, and that's the mindset I took on, was like, okay, if I'm going through this to teach somebody else, but then how do you start? Where do you mm-hmm. start from? And, mm-hmm. well, it starts from healing yourself. And that took me 30 years to realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's definitely a process.
Yeah, so I think I was just kind of born that way. Like, I was born appreciative to be here on this earth. And then when the shit was hitting the fan, if I may swear, uh-huh. when it was hitting the fan, I was like, okay, maybe this is because. And I always had that entrepreneurial mindset too. I got in trouble in fifth grade for selling candy to the kids on the playground, even though my markup was only 50% markup, but the teacher was mad and they got a product. I don't know. She called me out in front of everybody. But I've always had that mindset. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. And that's like cool that you're just continuing to take action on those ideas, because I think even sometimes, like I know for me, like I'm like, oh yeah, I could make this and that. And I was talking with a friend today about it. And I was like, yeah, I could make all that, but I didn't want to do it forever. Yes. Right. So I just never even started. Right. Cause I felt like I was going to be locked into this thing. And I'm realizing like, no, I don't need to be locked in. Like if that is for this season and I want to create that, make it. Mm-hmm. And you have the opportunity to change and grow mm-hmm. and move forward with another idea when that one comes along. And so.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing too, is like the evolution of how it will drop off. If that one thing you want to create today, if in a year it doesn't serve you, it kind of starts to put itself where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause helping people organize their home, mm-hmm. you keeping track of all your different projects that you're working on and growing. Do you have any helpful hints or tips for people, like how you manage time, space, mm-hmm. all of it?
I make sure that when I am budgeting my time, the first thing that I had to really kind of sit in was that the most important commodity in the world was time. That's the thing that I wanted the most was time. Money, mm-hmm. well, you need money to live, but that is secondary to time. So when I sit and think about it, I'm like, okay, am I well rested? Am I taking good care of myself? I put that first, and then everything else comes last. So I have several appointment books. I write everything down. I set alarms on my phone to keep all the things that I'm doing. But when I filled my plate, I put on my plate my rest and my well-being first. Mm-hmm. Where does that fall? And then my job second. And because I own my own business, I can put people where I want them.
Yeah.
And then when I started I just started putting the building blocks on my plate. So I would navigate it for a while. Okay, I'm getting my rest. I'm working my job. I'm successfully doing that. And I have some downtime. Let me stick in another project. Okay. I'm still getting all these things done. When I start to see that it jeopardizes my health, my sleep, then it's time to reevaluate mm-hmm. and take things off your plate. So look at it like a dinner plate. When your dinner plate's too full, it's overwhelming. Now you don't want to do things. Now procrastination kicks in. And yep. so just really yeah. kind of visualizing that plate. Can I handle this? Is this really what I like to do? And a lot of the things that I do, like the veterinary clinic, it just so happened to be that the hours were at the tail end of my day when I wasn't doing anything. It was only 4 hours a day, and it's self-care. So that's how I sell it to myself. This is my self-care time. I get to see animals. I get to work with some people. I'm getting out of the house. I'm not sitting there in my pajamas writing or, you know, I have to uh-huh. shower. I have to put my makeup on. I have to feel good about myself and then go there for a few hours, get my self-care, and then I get paid for it. So mm-hmm. now I go, oh, okay, this is nice. And I never say yes to anything right away. Never say yes to anything right away until you can go look at your plate.
That's good advice. Yeah. I like that. Because that's one thing that I've learned in this season. And I think even going through like burnout with my teaching career, like I knew going into this next venture, I did not want to hustle stuff. Yeah. Because I'm like, where does that get you? You know? And so I think business wise, that means more like a slow grow. Mm-hmm. And I see that popping up a lot more too, because we hear about the hustle culture and people are burnt out. So then what happens? So you're just perpetuating that cycle. Mm-hmm. So I like that you really put self-care on the top of your list. And I think I'm learning that too, because as creatives and as business owners, we can't necessarily show up when we're burnt out or it's not fun too.
Yeah. And then as soon as you start looking at your job as the daily grind, it's no longer your passion. And that's the other thing. I do it because it's my passion. With my cleaning business, if I have a client that we're negatively meshing and you're making me feel small, I will put up with it for a little while. And then I start to reevaluate. I'm looking for someone else behind your back to say, okay, when I can get rid of, when I can replace that X amount of dollars, you're getting told bye. I'm sorry. And I walk away from people. I don't give them a chance to argue. I don't let them affect me, because that's part of my mental health and myself. Yeah. So if we're not vibing, and I tell people that when I come into your home and I look at it and I say, okay, I say, if I'm not vibing and you're not vibing, why even work with it? Don't tell me when you're mad. Like, this has been going on a long time and this is where you've been making your mistakes. Let's be honest. It's like having a relationship. Honesty, if my clients lie to me, they're gone. If you lie to me, you're done. I'm sorry. And I've had them where I've given them chances. They lied to me again or treated me a certain type of way. And then I'm like, sorry. I told you in the beginning. So I'm one of the first cleaning companies that I've ever heard of that actually has fired clients.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, because that's the thing. It's like, we didn't get into our own business just to have the same headaches as we did maybe in corporate or some other, you know, company that we were working in. So,
Hard was it to tear away from your teaching career? How hard was it for me to walk away from the restaurant industry when it was asking me to come back? It was super hard.
Yeah. Super well, hard. And I'm still teaching. I just found a better environment. Right. Okay. So I think like that's an option too. And I haven't really hated teaching. It was more like the environment I was in. And so it's like, okay, let's try that. Change that. See if that helps it. And that did. So,
yeah. Were you teaching in the States?
I was. That's what
did you feel that they put too much pressure on you as a teacher to hit marks that were tough to hit? Yeah,
definitely. And I just didn't align with their philosophy anymore. So alignment is very important to me. Like, if we're not seeing eye to eye, then I don't want to be there grumpy, because that's not fair to the kids.
Well, good for you for recognizing that and making the shift, and then you enjoy your job.
Yeah. And then I change again.
Yeah. I interviewed a friend of mine who is a teacher there in Thailand as well. She came from the States. And so we talked about that last night, and it's true. And you go into teaching, or you go into a profession, because that's your passion. Mm-hmm. But when your passion gets taken away, then it shows through in your performance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't ever want my job just to be a job. Like, I've tried to talk myself into that kind of life. I just think there's some of us that have a hard time with that. Like, we really want it to be an outpouring of what we're good at and what we like to do and all that stuff. So,
And we're only here for one time, and I want to see some stuff. I don't want to see a cubicle or the inside of another person's business. And my skills are helping you get ahead, and you're diminishing me as a person and sucking the lifeblood out of me. No, thank you. I don't think it has to be that way. I don't think it has to be that way. And that's another personal mission of mine, is to change that narrative in the workplace of, let's show up, employers, show up for your employees that show up for you. Mm-hmm. And if they're not showing up for you, I'm like Gordon Ramsay. That's what my kids call me. I'm the Gordon Ramsay of cleaning. Go, bye, get out. You're not, I don't have to pay you.
Yeah.
There's a culture of, once I get hired, oh, you just have to pay me because I'm here. No, you have to earn your money.
Yeah. And hopefully it's a good fit job to make that happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So what other lessons have you learned during this season of starting your business and just getting things off the ground? Like, if you can help, because a lot of the people I talk to are like, have an idea that they are trying to build and expand. And what have you learned on your journey?
I learned just recently not to call it quits necessarily. So the economy here kind of started to shift. So I grew the company where we were making, gosh, we were making some good money. And the economy shifted. Gas prices went up. Property taxes went up. Inflation in the grocery stores, paying back those checks we were getting, I guess, the stimulus check. And because I'm a housekeeper, cleaner or whatever, I was a luxury to some people. And so we started to see that downside. And so as it was happening, I said, okay, I probably need to start looking for a job. So 3 months ago, I started looking for a job, but then the hemorrhaging happened so fast, and all my other little money avenues immediately dried up because those were, again, luxuries as well. And so I was slipping into this abyss of where I thought, okay, I'm in year two and my business is failing because of the economy. And I'm going to have to shut down every creative outlet because the other things depend on. And I may have to go back into restaurant management. And so I had a whole grief. And I was like snot crying, like my business has ended, blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't finding a job. So it was getting very stressful. So understanding that when you start a business, you're going to have moments of stress and panic. And I was having it, you know, you hear entrepreneurs talk about it all the time, but until you live it, you really don't know. And so I really was in my mind shutting my business down. Like, okay, I'm washed up. I'm finished. You know, the rest of the stuff's going to fall off and that's it. And then the perfect job came along for me. And once I got hired, that renewed everything. And I just kind of was like, okay, never discount yourself. Never say you're done yet until you're actually done. Because if you constantly are looking for ways to figure it out, save it, it's not going to happen by itself. It did not happen because I was laying in my bed and then it just magically happened. I continued to try to plot forward. So don't discount it in your head that you're done, because you may not be. And when you have those moments, look at them as shifts. It's not done. It's not defeating. It's a shift, and your business will come out of it better. I actually came out of it with some better tools to kind of start grasping people's attention and to start getting new clients. And so once I clicked in that little puzzle piece of an extra job that was my self-care job, I was able to start clicking pieces other places. So it's almost like a puzzle.
Yeah. And I feel like we're sold this, like, this entrepreneur life, sitting on the beach,
Yeah, right.
And that it happens quickly. Yeah. That it happens almost effortlessly. Like, here's your 2-3 keys to the puzzle that'll make everything fall in line and do it. And I've been on this journey for a bit, so I feel like kind of give the raw and dirty version of what that really looks like. And that is the ups and downs. And I talk to people that have been in business for themselves, like a few people, like 20 years. Then you have the seasons of really growth, and then you have to figure it out again. But like something that I was thinking about the other day was just like, when I was burnt out, I wanted an easy road. And I was sold, make a course, do this, do that. That's easy money. Well, it's not. As an entrepreneur, you're always having to innovate. You're always having to try new things, test things out, show up.
And a lot of people don't realize it, and they see it they see it from the outside looking in, and sometimes I think they think, oh, you're just lazy, you don't really want to work hard. This is working hard.
Yeah, it is. And so I appreciate that you share that, because I think it's important for people to know. And you thought, you know, it was shutting down, but you're still moving along with it. And it may look different than what you had hoped, but it hasn't died. And I think we have to go into it with a long-term vision sometimes, of that it is going to take 5-7 years to build a solid base, because it takes so much time to try different avenues depending on what kind of business you're in, getting the word out. Are you feeling imposter syndrome, the big buzzword, you know? So then that takes time to get over and feel confident enough to get your message out, like all these different things that we don't talk about. Building a business and showing up for that. So yeah, stepping into this world, you just have to be flexible with it and not feel defeated if you're still like, or if you have a day job, or if you have a side job that you need to make rent or mortgage or whatever.
Yeah. And those heavy duty taxes, being a busy business owner, I did the math on the, if I had to charge my clients what I have to pay in tax to do a job, they would never hire me. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is not what it seems to be. Like the word entrepreneur, people think of, oh, the rich life, the beach life. That's not true. It's not true. That's a few perks. And your job doesn't stop at 5. One job might stop at 5, but then there's the other jobs you have.
Yeah. And so I really just encourage people, and I'm sure you lean into this too, like, why did I start this journey? What is my purpose in the season? And how am I using it in these, you know, different avenues of things that I'm trying to create? So like on those hard days, what do you lean on for comfort, encouragement, support?
So gratefulness, being grateful for the small stuff, going outside, being grateful that I have a roof over my head every month, even when it was at its worst and I wasn't sure how I was going to make my rent, I still managed to do it. I managed to figure it out. So being grateful about those small little things. I lean on humor, my family, trying to just separate my mind from the depressing for a moment, stepping outside of it, just taking a few deep breaths and saying, you know what? I'm not hungry. My kids are fed. They're happy. We do have a lot of good things, and kind of just reassessing and saying, these are the things I have, not the things I don't.
Right.
So that's what I really leaned on in the worst of it, or not the worst of it. The worst of it, I don't know. I was even panicking. I mean, that's when you have to lean on a friend that's in the same situation or has been, and to say to them, okay, you can't solve my problem, but what advice can you give me so that I'm not, you know, completely going down the rabbit hole?
Right.
And so that helped me a lot too, is I do have a good support system of entrepreneurial friends who have paved the way for me. And I'm just kind of like running behind them like, hey. Yeah. And so when those days come, watching for that stuff, sometimes it'll naturally happen on my feed. Another business person will post a video of what it really looks like in a day in the life. And I kind of go, okay, I feel that same way. I feel that same way. Okay, I'm okay. I'm going in the right direction then. And just really, and you can find it on podcasts, you know, kind of getting that commonality with somebody who's going through it or been through it and can kind of say to you, hey, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. One of my favorite podcasts is How I Built That by Guy Raz, I think is how you say it. And there was one of the guy that created Lush, right? And his story is the whole mountaintop to valleys, like two or three times, if I remember right. And you're just like, whoa. And so that's when it's like, oh, you really do need to lean into the creative process of like, this experimentation is never done. And I need to get okay, like I need to be okay with the process and not the destination, or when I do this, this will happen. You know, it's like, it may never be done. You know, like so many people are working hard for retirement, but I think it's that time freedom, or, you know, other freedoms that they're looking for. And so how can you build that into your day-to-day as you're building out these ideas too, is how I guess I would want to see it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also knowing where you came from, if you can go back to where you were working the 9-to-5 and you were, you know, those, some of those thoughts you were thinking back then and saying, you know what, I'm not in that. So keep moving forward and keep kind of seeing where the path's going to take you.
Yeah.
I mean, sense I feel like, yeah, I feel like that helps a great deal when people are in those low moments.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then enjoying the highs and not being money motivated. I'm not here. I mean, okay. Getting rich would be a nice perk, right? But along with getting rich, they have their double-edged sword. So there's always a negative that comes with the positive, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of weigh those negatives and go, maybe not. Maybe I'm okay right now, just the way I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
And reevaluate that. If I was doing it for the money, then I would have already been back to the 9 to 5, you know.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. My yeah. compromise was like, okay, a vet's office, self-care, and you get paid. And I did the job well and got a raise my first day, and I didn't even really do much. But because nice. I was interested and mm-hmm. I was invested and I was showing up, that impressed them enough to say, you know what? And my kids do the same thing. They start mm-hmm. a job and they do it with enthusiasm, because when they apply, I say to them, really think about this. Is this really what you want to do? Is that amount of money that they're offering you what you're going to be satisfied with? Because you're going to have negatives. You're going to have reasons to complain. Is mm-hmm. that money motivating you every day to get up, be happy, and show up for that employer?
Yeah, that's good to remember. Because like, even when we're searching for like the perfect job or a better fit, yeah, it might be a better fit, but it's not going to be perfect.
Like, exactly.
There's still going to be friction or things that rub you the wrong way or things that you're going to have to navigate. So
yeah,
if we like can get to maybe a better fit, that's good.
Yeah. Like we talked about in our podcast mm-hmm. last week or whatever, whenever yeah. it was,
mm-hmm.
it's like a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It has to work for both people.
Yeah.
It has to. And both people have to be satisfied and happy
mm-hmm.
so that they want to show up.
Yeah. That's good. So as you share different things, you have your podcast, you have your writing, you have a lot going on mm-hmm. coming up. Where can people connect with you and just stay in touch with you?
Okay. So I hang out on Facebook under Coley's Cleaners, Coleis Cleaners. That's where you can see the little Bitmoji and all the little ideas that we have for the cleaning company. And then I have another Facebook profile, Nicole The Content Contessa, and then that's also on Instagram. I'm Nicole Miller on TikTok. I think it's Nicole Miller 77. And on YouTube, you can check out the podcast Conversations with Coley. I upload an episode every Sunday, at least I try to. We're 14 episodes in, and then nice. Eventually we're going to start releasing those on all listening platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Where else do I hang out? I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, real quick before we go, like, what made you want to start a podcast? Because I'm always interested, like, where that comes from, because I'm enjoying mine.
Yeah.
Where did it come for you?
For me, back when I was what I call a shutaway child, I was put in a room. I did not have TV. My stepfather was pretty cruel. The only thing that I had was a clock radio and a cheap tape player, and my mom always picked the tapes. So I could only tune in to VCY, which was Christian radio. But for my age, they had cartoon shows, they had talks, and I really just gravitated to that. And I really liked talk radio. So when podcasts started coming out, I was like, oh my God, it's like talk radio again. I love this. And so I was like, man, I want to do that one day. And then I started guesting and I was bitten by the bug to want to do one. And then it just kind of naturally popped out. One day I was scrubbing a stove and Conversations with Coley popped into my head, and the connection with the book series kind of popped in my head. And I said, you know what? You're attacking subjects people don't want to talk about. Why not mm-hmm. talk about them on your podcast and have guests that have been through it share their stories? And then that'll connect the book and what it's about and make it make sense for people. So
it just kind of stemmed from being a little kid and being like, man, I used to really look up to Oprah and be like, man, I want to be like Oprah. I didn't want to go through the schooling and all this stuff.
Right.
So I don't know what happened, but I'm happy that I was able to figure out the podcast realm because now I'm kind of living that dream.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing today. We don't have to go to school like we thought we used to, or like there's so many platforms to create what you want to create, like self-publish, to create your own podcast, to whatever it is. I mean, YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. Making your own TV shows. And
And you used to think, used to be you had to have money, right? To make your own show. And so you had to have all this backing. And these were things that were never an option for me. And so when I figured out the podcast thing, I was like, oh, I can actually make my dream come true. And so people got to lean into that too. Like, think about that. You have to be, you're in charge of your own destiny. You're in charge of making those dreams come true for you, figuring out what's available to you.
Yeah. That's awesome. Love it. Well, I just appreciate you sharing all your wisdom and insights from your journey and all the things you're working on. So I can't wait to see how all that plays out and what comes of it. So thank you so much for sharing that.
And thank you for having me. I really enjoy our conversations and I hope we have more.
Yeah. Anytime.
Okay.
I can't thank you enough for listening to these podcast episodes and supporting the work that I'm doing here. If you can think of anybody that could benefit from the conversation I just had, please go ahead and forward that to them. If you are on Apple Podcasts, a review would be much appreciated, or a follow on Spotify is how I can continue to get the word out about the work that I'm doing here. If you would like more support and encouragement throughout your week, you can find me on Instagram at A Creative Purpose. And I would also like to drop into your email box with some more insights and encouragement throughout your weeks. And you can do that at naomigeidel.com. Until next time, go serve the world as only you can.